This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9.
So it's Kieran here from Checkpoint on Joy 94.9 with Kevin from Route 59, having recently played their upcoming project. Can you tell me a little bit about what NecroBarista actually is?
Hi, so NecroBarista is a cinematic visual novel set in a magical Melbourne cafe where the dead come back for one last night and one last cup of coffee.
It looks, so you said it's a visual novel. Does that mean there's going to be a lot of content to actually follow through? Having played a small little demo myself, I enjoyed going around the entire area and reading everything. That's just the kind of gamer I am, but is that what we can expect?
Correct. So compared with traditional visual novels, we're placing a really big focus on having scenes that the player can actually go around and explore in the 3D environment. Now, embedded in these scenes, there are going to be a bunch of what we call micro-narratives. And they're like almost mini short stories. You can find out about NPCs in the cafe, you know, oh, like an anecdote from the past about two characters interacting, that kind of stuff, yep.
Okay. Now, personally, I'm loving the art style. It kind of reminds me a bit of the anime-esque cafe kind of shows. And there are a few of them around, like Tokyo Ghoul, which is one of my favorites. So can you tell me where was your inspiration for the art style kind of derived from?
So Akiki Shimbo, so the director of Shaft, he is like my biggest idol. Like, I love the guy. So he's famous for shows like Bakemonogatari, Madoka Magica, Sayonara Zetsubou Senpai, you know, that very flat, harsh lighting, you know. I really love his style, so I'll say that's my biggest influence.
Now, what drove you to base the story in Melbourne, and will there be Aussie sensibilities and references in relation to what happens in the game?
We're all from Melbourne. Like, my whole team is situated in Melbourne, and one thing that irks us a bit is the fact that Australia is so underrepresented in video games and in pop media in general. Like, we're not talking about the you know, Crocodile Dundee, Kangaroos, Koala stuff. Like, actually what Australia is like. So we wanted to make a game that was set in Australia. Also the fact that we want to make stuff that we know. We want to draw from the everyday life we live in. And so for that, we decided that Melbourne is the best place to be.
What kind of audience reaction have you had from NecroBarista at PAX here the last day or two so far?
Everyone has been really, really nice. Like, I am blown away by how positive everybody has been about the game. I think people really like the art style. They think that the visuals are very nice. But even going through the game, traditionally I felt visual novels are quite hard to demo at shows like this. Because, you know, no one sit down and read for 10 minutes. But that's what happens. People sit down and read for 10 minutes. That means a lot to me, right? I think that's a really good sign that people like the game.
Well, I think when it's a good game and there's actually a good story to read, someone will. And I do enjoy it myself, actually taking some time to actually sit down and play a game. And sometimes a good meditative game is actually a good game to play in that kind of a scenario. Now, can you tell me, when can we kind of expect NecroBarista to come out, and on what platforms?
So currently, NecroBarista is slated for release in Q3 2018 for Steam. So PC, Mac, as well as the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. I'd love to see it on the Switch. If our listeners wanted to find out more about NecroBarista, where would they go to find information?
You can follow us on our Facebook page, so Route 59 Games, as well as our website, necrobarista.com.
Hey, listen!
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Hi guys, this is Cameron at PAX for Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, and I have just finished playing Intergalactic Space Princess, and I am here with two of the developers, Cherie.
Hiya.
And Allison.
Hi there.
Now, does one of you want to quickly run me through what is your game, and what's the story?
So Intergalactic Space Princess is kind of a hyperactive point-and-click adventure game where you play as a teenage girl called Malene, who's dressed as her favourite character from her favourite TV show, the Intergalactic Space Princess. And on her way, and during a normal day, she ends up getting eaten by a giant worm and pushed into a different dimension where the space princess is real.
Fantastic. And so it's got a really lovely kind of hand-drawn style. It's very smooth kind of artwork. Is there any particular kind of inspiration on the design behind all of that?
So the design is all done by Izzy Gramp, our creative director. And I would say her biggest inspiration is trying to not use a tablet too much. So a lot of it is done with a pen lasso tool because she uses a touchpad.
Right, okay. The main thing that we're getting from this is that it is a very kind of female-based character. And so what kind of audience are you hoping to hit with all of this?
So we're looking primarily for young girls who are maybe a little bit like frustrated with their lives or frustrated with their family lives, and looking for a bit of an escape and something that they can relate to, because there's not much out there really in that.
Fantastic. Now, I noticed that it's playing here on tablets, which I believe is what you were saying you're going to try and focus on getting it out onto. What kind of timeline do you think you guys are looking at the moment?
We are hoping for mid-early next year launch window. We haven't confirmed that yet, but post-March is probably the best time. That will be for iOS, and depending how that goes, we'll have a look at other platforms too.
Fantastic.
It's the time frame we've been telling everyone, so I guess we have to stick to it now.
It's on our merch, so we should probably try and ship to
You're
it.
You're locked
yeah.
in now. Now, you guys have been mentioning before that you come from a development team that is all female, which I am all about. I think that's really important in modern gaming. How do you think that that has really helped with creating this game and the story you're trying to tell?
I think it gives us some like unique perspectives on the world and maybe a style of thought that is not often seen in like indie gaming or AAA gaming or gaming in general. I think it's like...
The game is so much for us in a way, but we realize now showing at these events, and I think we always knew all along, there are so many young girls out there who are just craving to have a game like this. So being a part of that target audience means that we can talk to them at events and make the game better and better and better for them.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Have you guys had a good PAX? How's the reaction been?
Oh, it's been really excellent. This is actually my first PAX, so it's...
First PAX can be a bit overwhelming.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. As I said, it's a beautiful game. It's got a really lovely heart to it. I really enjoyed getting in there amongst it, and I look forward to seeing more from this fantastic character that you're creating and from more of Intergalactic Space Princess, because I love me some Sailor Moon, and I'm getting some massive Sailor Moon vibes.
Yes,
absolutely. Thank you so much for enjoying the game.
Hi, it's Jimmy here from Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, and I am joined here at PAX in the PAX Rising section with Andrew from Spree Entertainment to talk about this really fascinating upcoming title called Fiend Legion.
Yes.
So can you tell us a bit more, what is Fiend Legion?
Okay, so Fiend Legion is a collectible card game. With a turn-based strategy, you play on the board, and plus a bit of tower defense in there as well. Yeah. So the objective of the game is to like play the cards as units onto the board, and then maneuver your units, creating your own strategy, and then destroy the enemy's tower to win the game.
So it seems to be, I guess, visually an amalgamation between like your classic trading card game, so yep. your Hearthstone or Magic the Gathering there. But then also with a MOBA-esque sort of like viewpoint of a battlefield where like you capture the flag, but it looks like a board game. What sort of feel did you actually want to have with this, and what do you want to achieve?
Yeah, so the design is intentional, because we want to appeal to the Hearthstone players, but we know that they probably want a bit more action, so that's why there's a spatial element to it, where you maneuver your units across the board and deploy your strategy. So it's a lot more strategy than just playing cards. And what we ultimately want to do is make this game an esports game, so you can actually play in open tournaments. Yeah.
So that's a very ambitious step to move towards.
Yeah.
But what elements do you think are important for an esports title?
Yeah, so for esports title, what's important is obviously the card balancing is one element. The other element is we gotta make the game visually enticing as well. So people have the same level of enjoyment as playing as well as watching people play. So that's why we spend a lot of time, like, you know, making sure the UI looks great, adding in all the special effects, like designing cards. Also, what we actually focus on is when we were rebalancing and creating the cards, is to make sure that you can win, like, you know, no matter what sort of cards you bring along with your deck when you play.
So in terms of having a deck, do you have preset decks that you have to use, or do you have the ability to customize?
No, like, it's fully customizable, so you can bring whatever you like, but obviously there's only one restriction. You can only bring, like, maximum of three of the same card in a deck. Having said that, though, like, you know, there's a range of, like, melee units, range units, wizard units, and also item cards as well. So, you know, you can really create your own set of strategy with this game.
Well, it certainly is a game that's quite simple to grasp. So a typical game is, what, about 20 minutes?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, for a person who has played this, like, you know, a couple of times, like, you know, the timing would be about 20 minutes. But for a new beginner, maybe a 30-minute match.
So the game already looks very polished, but you were talking before and you're saying it is still under development. Yeah. So when do you anticipate to launch?
Yeah, so early next year is where we'll do a soft launch first, like, you know, focusing mainly on the multiplayer aspect. And then we'll follow with, like, the single player campaign is for those, like, who don't want to play multiplayer, just want to learn more about the game, like, you know, playing through our story. And then also what we'll do is we'll look into other platforms, like on the tablet and, you know, maybe other game modes more suitable for mobile play.
So the game's already gathered quite a lot of interest because you've received funding to develop this game. Just tell a bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So last year we were lucky enough to be one of the studios that was given a Film Victoria grant, like, for developing the game. So that really helps us, like, move the game along, you know, being an indie developer. And then also early this week, we were actually one of the winners, like, for investment at the Global Top Round conference.
Well, congratulations for that.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, thank you.
And so I think you have to check out Fiend Legion as it comes about, and there'll be a feature on also on the Checkpoint website. So
yeah,
thank you again.
All right, fantastic. Thanks very much.
Hey, listen!
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Hey guys, this is Cameron for Checkpoint on Joy 94.9 on our final day at PAX 2017. I'm here with Travis from Atomizer Games, who's lead designer on a great little game called Heist. Hi, Travis.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you. Now, can you just quickly run us through what is your game? How does it play?
Right, so Heist is a noir cat burglar game. We use non-lethal gadgets to break in, get the loot, and get out again. So it's all about becoming the most infamous cat burglar that's ever lived. It's a sort of, like, isometric top-down game. And as I said, use the non-lethal gadgets. So there's no killing, there's no getting caught shooting your way out.
I think that, especially in today's gaming, like, non-lethal is something that is important, I feel. There is a lot of lethal gaming.
Yeah.
What was kind of the big decision towards going towards a non-lethal style of gameplay?
Yeah, I mean, so to say, like, it's not totally non-lethal. Like, there's guards with guns that will sort of shoot you back, but the main thing was that when it came to the mechanics of stealth, they always had some way of killing a guard, and that seemed to me to undermine what stealth was about. So I wanted to see what happened when that wasn't part of the experience. What felt like was maybe lacking, and what could we put in to fix that up?
Now, it's got a really distinct style. What were your inspirations behind the style that you've used?
I mean, honestly, there wasn't anything that came to us and going, oh yeah, let's do that. It was just like, I was thinking about the idea, and I had this cool thought of, like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if a comic panel popped up when someone opened up a trench coat, and that's how you selected what gadget you wanted to use. And then, while we don't have those things in our game, just that idea of comic panels and comic, or the comic style, as well as noir, trench coats and noir are, like, you know, go together, like coffee and cigarettes. And yeah, it just made sense to us, and it just worked, it felt good, and we just kept with it.
Now, you mentioned gadgets, and I feel like gadgets are always a really important bit of kind of stealth, and also that kind of spy, thiefy, noir-y style. Can you highlight maybe your top three favorite gadgets?
So one of my favorites is probably the toy gun, or fake gun. It's kind of like, you know, this joke about we didn't have guns in there, but this is a way of having a gun in there, where you use that to sort of pull it out and stick up a guard. Guard doesn't know it's fake, but it stops them in their tracks, giving you some time to get away. I like the tripwire, mostly because you put it down, just watching the guards fall over straight on their face is hilarious. I mean, a favorite thing I did was in the trailer, like, time it to a cymbal crash.
Yes, fantastic.
And after that, you know, probably the smoke bomb, just because you can be a 1930s ninja.
Yeah, I love a good smoke bomb as well. One of the things that is really obvious when you're playing it is that the figure has a character to them, but is quite nondescript.
Yeah.
Was that a deliberate choice?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, like, there was a lot of reasons behind it. One of the things was, like, you know, we wanted more people to be able to play it, and we didn't want to say you are X. We wanted to try and make it feel like you were the cat burglar and sort of thing. So, and we felt that was easier by just trying to obscure any sort of particularly defining elements. Whether that be, like, sort of the language in, from the first person that's used, or the animations and the general character design. Like, trench coat's good because it is just a trench coat. We did try to add some things because we found a lot of people did default to thinking it was male, and so we tried to add some more feminine qualities, you know, almost to, like, muddy it so you're never quite sure.
Yep.
But yeah, it was just so, like, anyone can pick it up. And I feel like that's been happening a lot where we've had people all from... There's no specific audience, I guess, that, like, favored it, you know. Everyone's come up and enjoyed the game.
Fantastic. Now, in noir style, a lot of cat burglars usually have quite lavish names, Pink Panther and the like. What would yours be?
Four.
Yeah, putting you on the spot. You weren't expecting that one.
Oh, jeez. So, I mean, I guess what I'm going to go with is my online handle is Doom, and so I'd be the Doombat.
The Doombat. Fantastic. Well, thank you for speaking to us about that today. Heist, any plans for a release date or anything like that?
We don't have a release date yet, but it will be coming to Steam PC and hopefully soon.
This is Kieran here with Checkpoint Gaming on Joy 94.9. I'm joined with Kerry from Humble Sage Games after previewing Vale of Crows and discussing their other upcoming projects. So, Kerry, can you tell us a little bit about what Vale of Crows is?
All right, so it's a real-time strategy medieval sandbox. Basically, the idea is it's a kind of a combination of mechanics from Total War, Mount and Blade. The campaign map runs in real time. You do all of your base building, your army, your faction commands, everything from the campaign map. But then when you go to battle, it goes into a battle map. Paper, scissors, rock style strategy. All the castles are completely destructible, so you can launch catapults, everything explodes and destroys, everything goes on fire. Your hero units, you can change your equipment, they level up, you can give them different abilities to help you in the world. In the main campaign, if your main hero dies, it's game over, but the game world is persistent, so whatever changes happened when you start again, that your old faction is now an AI faction, you start again in the world.
Yeah. Okay, so from my point of view, Vale of Crows kind of looked like to me a bit of an Age of Empires type game, and with the inspirations you've already had, tell me what kind of inspired this style of gameplay for Vale of Crows?
I love strategy games. I loved Age of Empires when I was a kid. I love Stronghold. I guess I took a lot of the elements that I liked from these games and I tried to put them together in something that that worked really well. And it was quite unique in its style as well.
Okay. So tell me, how has Vale of Crows been so far? How has the reception been with the game here at PAX? What have people been saying?
People really like it, to be honest. I mean, it's the type of people that have been really into it. There are the people that like games like Total War and Mount and Blade. You know, it is a niche game. It's not for everyone, you know. It's not this fast-paced kind of console game. It's this sit-down and really immerse yourself in the world type of game. So the people that are coming through already have an interest in this game style, and people have really been enjoying it, so...
Okay. Now, see here that you've also got a game called Cast, and the other one, is it Castle of Angaria?
Gates of Angaria.
What are those games going to be like? Because we can only see previews here, but no playable demos.
Yeah. So Cast is a VR spellcaster game. So if you're into Harry Potter and you want to be a wizard and you want to create your own spells. Basically, you wave a wand around, it gives you different abilities on your spell, and you fire it at the enemy, which is an incoming horde. It's currently up on Kickstarter right now, so it's in the early stages, but it is a lot of fun to play. And Gates of Angaria is a narrative-based role-playing game, so it's quite a large game. Basically, the idea is eight different characters, different races, so it's a fantasy game. And as you play through these characters, you can choose to be good and evil, but you actually get a different perspective of the story. And so the choices you make through the game will affect later quests and the outcome. And basically, it's a third-person role-play game, basically, inspired by, you know, games like Skyrim, The Witcher, all of that.
Okay, so now in terms of availability, Velocrows, is it it's on early access Steam? When can we see it fully available to play? And on, is it just PC for now? Will it be going to other consoles later?
It will just be a PC game, but we are planning on releasing on Mac and Linux eventually once it's done. So the goal is probably quarter one next year for full release. It is available on early access. It's nearly feature complete. Just about to add full mod support. Hopefully workshop support soon after that. Then it's just tightening the bolts, you know, it's a lot of polish.
And lastly, where can we find more information on Humble Sage Games and Vale of Crows?
All right, so humblesage.com and valeofcrows.com.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time today, Kerry. It was a pleasure chatting to you and looking forward to the game.
Thank you.
Hey, listen.
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
Hi, this is Archer with Checkpoint. I'm joined with
James from Devil Die Studios.
James, thanks for joining me today. So you're one of the developers on ChromaShift?
Yes, I'm the producer and lead project on ChromaShift.
Okay, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the title, tell us a bit about ChromaShift.
So ChromaShift takes two people and puts that as the main focus in a cooperative play using puzzles, using colours. So throughout the level you'll find these little orbs that will change the colour of your character, and depending on what colour you are, you can interact with certain things. So if you're orange, you can go through an orange door. If you're green, you can go through a green door. And you kind of use this mechanic to solve puzzles together and get through the levels and uncover kind of the secret of the background to the world and what's kind of happened.
Cool. It looks really interesting. So what was kind of your inspirations behind the concept?
So back in when me and the lead programmer were doing our programming course, we had to come up with a little game to do with color. So we created this little 2D game. It was really simple. It was just, depending on what color you are, you could either jump on a block or you'd fall through a block and die. And then when we were coming up with an idea for a game, we're like, well, let's take that idea, this game that's essentially around color, and we always wanted to do cooperative and just expand on it, and that's what it's kind of become today.
Now, we interviewed you last year as well.
Yes.
What, like, has there been any much change to the game since then? What's different?
Yeah, so the characters have new abilities now. So
yep.
Sai, the one with the tentacle arm, has a roll ability. She can turn into, like, a little ball.
Mm-hmm.
And we've changed Theta, the bigger robot, has a charge on a button now, so
yep.
He can charge whenever he wants. In terms of that, we've added extra axe. So in this build, you can see part of the purple axe, which wasn't in last year. But we've also added blue as well, and we're currently working on red, which is our last axe of the game.
Cool. I'm a bit of a designer myself, so I'm just curious, like, being really color-based in its gameplay, have you done anything to help people who have color blindness or any accessibility?
Yeah, so that was a big thing that last year when we were doing practice, we had a few people come over and they're like, it's pretty hard to play for me. So one of the things that we have done is we've given the option to change between currently three different settings
yep.
of colorblind to help them out. So, and we've had people play it that are colorblind and they, help them out.
It's always good. It's something we really need to consider.
Yeah, exactly.
Accessibility. And colorblindness is so much more common than people realize as well.
It's hugely common. The amount of people that we come around and be like, it's just kind of hard to see. And it's like, we got you covered, don't worry.
Awesome. So do you have any sort of time frames? And how long have you been working on it?
So yeah, so we've been working on it since February last year.
Yep.
And we are aiming for release towards the end of January next year.
Oh, excellent. So really coming up now. Yeah. So the next 5-6 months or so.
Yeah.
Awesome. What platforms are you looking to launch on?
So we're launching on Steam on Windows, and we are also planning for a later release for the consoles.
Oh, excellent.
Xbox One and PS4.
Easy. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries.
It looks great. It was great to meet you.
Hi, guys. This is Cameron at PAX for Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. And I'm here with Mike, the creator of Dead Static Drive. Thanks for taking a second to talk with us, Mike.
My pleasure.
So, first of all, this game looks beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about this game?
Okay. My usual pitch is that it's Grand Theft Cthulhu. So
fantastic. Already love it. Yep.
It's a nightmare horror survival adventure game.
You have a Nightmares Cthulhu. Are we dealing with only, like, Eldritch gods, or...?
There's Eldritch gods involved. There's a lot of supernatural creatures as well. And I want to keep it kind of X-Files-y, so it feels like there's a lot of different kinds of monsters as well. They're not all supernatural, but there's alien creatures from another dimension, and people being horrible as well.
Yeah, and so I'm noticing we've got it playing in the background here, and we've got some Tremors action happening with some earthworms going on and people hiding in a diner. Is it an open world? Is it kind of stages? How will the monsters kind of appear around the world? That kind of thing.
Right. Okay. So it is an open world game. When you start playing the game, you can travel in any direction you want, but it starts off just being a road trip when you first play it. You're on a road trip, and then as you travel a bit further into it, the world starts to decay, monsters start to appear, and in fact, after 30 days in-game, the world will end, and kind of like Groundhog Day, you get rewound back to the start.
Right.
And so you have 30 days to try and work out how to stop that happening, and every time that you drive, time passes. Every time that you sleep, and you have to sleep every day, time passes. Or you could drink coffee and try and stay awake.
Yeah, but that never works out that's what I think most of us are surviving on right
now,
and we're barely pulling through. So as the time kind of clicks down, does that mean that the monsters that we see get crazier and far out?
They do, yeah. Yeah, they get crazier. It becomes really hectic, and if you haven't managed all of the creatures well, what will happen is they'll actually kill all the NPCs.
Right, okay.
And so what happens in the world is the NPCs move around in the game world while you're playing. It's kind of like a turn-based board game. Pieces move around, they do their tasks, NPCs live their lives, and on day 3, someone will die.
Awesome.
And if you're not there, you can't save them. So the first playthrough, you won't know any of this, and then on the subsequent playthroughs, you'll learn who dies when, you'll be able to save them, or you'll be able to ignore certain people to save others.
Right, so it's a bit of like a managing your time and figuring out. So it's giving me a little bit of a Majora's Mask feel as well there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've kind of got X-Files meets Majora's Mask going on with Grand Theft Auto thrown in.
Yep.
It sounds like a pretty good combination. What kind of platforms are you hoping to bring it to?
At the moment, I'd love it to be on everything. Like my goal, originally my goal when I started this was for it to be on Vita. And the Vita is not powerful enough for Unreal 4 engine games, at the moment anyway. And then the Switch got announced, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like perfect for me.
The Switch is so helpful for indie developers as well.
It
really supports them.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, when I've been designing it, it's for mouse and keyboard, but also for controller. So hopefully every console I'll be able to be on.
Fantastic. Do you have a kind of timeline in mind? Or
Definitely when it's done.
Yep.
I'm allowed. Thankfully, I'm allowed to do that. But what I want to do is I want to aim for the end of next year-ish, give or take, I don't know. Yeah, but definitely when it's done. I want it to be good.
Awesome. Well, it's a pleasure to play. I had a play of it yesterday at the Open Day Arcade, and I'm probably going to have a play of it again now because it's just a really lovely game, and it's fantastic. I love it.
Thanks so much.
That's all right. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Hey, listen.
Want to keep up to date with the latest gaming news, reviews, previews, and more? Check out our website, checkpointgaming.net. That's checkpointgaming.net. Achievement unlocked.
So hi, this is Jimmy.
And Rachel.
I'm here at Checkpoint on Joy 94.9 at a very busy PAX, and looking at some of the promising titles at PAX Rising, and very pleased to be here talking about this. I think it's one of the highlights of so far in PAX, and that's looking at Ticket to Earth. And we've got Nick here to tell us a bit more about the game.
Hello. Well, Ticket to Earth is an innovative puzzle tactics hybrid that's a fully-fledged indie RPG. It's a kind of uniquely Australian experience, I think, in many ways. It's set on a remote mining colony deep in space. People are isolated there. The rich are leaving now that the mining boom is over, and the government is turning their backs upon the poor that have come out to work and generate the revenue for the mining boom. So with one spaceship planning to leave, everyone is scrabbling to get a ticket home. So this is kind of the drama that situates all the combat in the game. So it's very combat heavy, but it's a game that seems to really appeal to both core gamers and people that don't play games at all. It crosses over into a mainstream audience in a very pleasing way. It's a mixture of match three line drawing and tactical strategy like a traditional tactics game.
I think what stands out most to me is the overall aesthetic of the game, and particularly that the intuitive nature of using the symbols and colours. I have to admit that when I first saw it, I thought it was going to be a very, very like complex game to get a grasp of, but it was just intuitive, and also it instantly makes you think of strategy. What's the sort of reception you've had for the game so far?
We've had a great reception, actually. We obviously showed it last year for the first time at PAX, and that was a bit of a scary moment when you step out of the studio and actually reveal it to the world. But it was really rewarding to see this slow trickle of people seeing it, and, you know, PAX is home to gamers of great discernment. And so people really cleaved to what was new and fresh and colourful about it. And I'm glad you mentioned the aesthetic, because I guess we wanted to make it a rich sci-fi, sort of comic book-style adventure. It leverages a lot of 70s sci-fi art, taking inspiration particularly from Moebius, and so it's like it's got its own look and its own vibe, I think, which is one of the reasons why I think people really click.
Since its release a few months ago, what's the reception been like? I mean, I know it came out on the Google Play Store first and then iOS.
Just to correct you there, we have not released it on Android yet. It's coming out in the next couple of months. Oh, not a couple of months, a couple of weeks, folks. And for the other people that are writing to us at the moment, angry that we haven't released it on Android, it really is coming. And I can look at a person across the room at PAX now that is playing the Android version, so it is that close. But the reception was totally awesome. Showing it here at PAX last year and having so many people getting excited about it also excited members of the Apple editorial team who came and met with us. We were very fortunate to be featured as part of their celebration of independent games, which meant that we were on the front page of the App Store all around the world. We have people playing the game in every country, even people, though we haven't localized the full content yet. It's hugely popular in Germany, France, China, Russia. It's just an amazing result for a team of seven people working in a tiny room in Carlton.
I was going to say, I feel like I should have known that, because the minute it came into my email saying it could download, I was right onto downloading it and playing it. But I remember hearing something last year that you were planning to release on Android as soon as possible.
Well, we are planning to bring it to Android, and we've actually just been taking our time bringing it there, because with each version we try and add a little bit more polish and make some changes that are suitable for the platform and for the audience. So the Android version that you can play today is slightly enhanced in some way.
Okay, so does that mean, I got an email recently from your things about the new content coming.
New content coming out, if you have the iOS version at the moment, you will have our very sexy AR demo, so that you can go into AR mode and play. I think it's around 12 levels of the game in augmented reality, which is really interesting, actually. If you love the game and you go out into a brightly lit open area, playing it in on a sunny day on a tabletop in a park was quite a mind-blowing experience, because if you see, we put a lot of effort into the game art, and so we've actually built the levels out to be a little bit larger, and you can fully explore the game world by moving the camera around. It's really amazing, actually.
So looking at augmented reality, which I'm glad that some game developers are finally taking seriously, what do you think was the biggest challenge in sort of like moving this sort of game to such a realm?
Well, it actually quite surprisingly, came together very easily. And I think more the thing was we wanted to make sure that the experience felt like additive to the regular game. So we took a lot of time to frame the augmented version really properly. So when it lays itself out onto the tabletop, being able to move in closely and control the characters as you move them around was really important. And it's actually worked out really nicely. I honestly wouldn't say I would play the entire game in AR because I think my hands would get sore from holding the phone, but it's really, really lovely.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing the new content that's coming out, and happy to know that Android fans are also going to be happy as well.
Well, they will be. Episode 3, we're hoping to have it out before Christmas, so people that already have the game will have something to play over the holidays.
Well, it's looking like it's going to be a very Merry Christmas.
Definitely for me.
This is Kieran here with Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. I'm joined by Anthony from Cognitive Forge after playing their game Aura of Worlds. So, Anthony, can you tell me a little bit about what Aura of Worlds actually is?
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for dropping by our booth. So, Aura of Worlds is a kind of creative tactics work-life platformer. We throw you into death, maze, your objectives to progress, utilizing your wits, your reflexes, and twisting the world to your advantage. So there's a heavy focus on improvisation. For example, there's a lava pit in front of a chest that you want to reach. What do you do? Do you try and swim through and get burnt? Do you grapple across? Do you slow down time and bounce off enemy heads? Do you just throw a boomerang and fetch the item on the other side safely? Or do you throw a grenade into it and blow it up and setting everything nearby on fire from the sparks that spawn?
Yeah.
Likewise, there are different level themes ranging from like deadly rising lava to pursuing toxic pollen to fading dark to bosses that take place across the entire level. Creative abilities include like grappling ropes, to bending time, to turning invisible. A lot of different. We focus a lot on improvisation. How does the player twist the environment and adversities to their favor? How do I use what would normally be against me against itself?
Yeah, well, after playing, there's a lot of like quick actions and a lot of fast thinking you have to do because there's so many things coming at you from every angle. So, yeah, I certainly get that a lot. Now, tell me, after looking at this art style, it's very retro and very cute and colourful. Where did that inspiration kind of come from?
Quite a few sources, to be honest. So, like, we play a lot of platformers, metroidvanias, and roguelike platformers.
Yep.
So, Splunky, Viganti, Tower Climb, 20XX. What else was there? Dead Cells, Cave Blazers, Metroid as well,
yeah.
Mega Man, a lot of those games. We played way too many platformers.
No, I love the platformers.
Lead up to Terraria.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's one of my things. I do enjoy a good platformer, and this one, it does look like it's going to be a lot of fun. The fact that as you progress through the game, you actually get to upgrade and buy items to help you actually progress better. Now, what kind of reception have you found Aura of Worlds has had here at PAX so far with the gamers who have played it?
Well, so far it's been very positive. Most players like the challenge, the variety. One person was critical, two people were critical about the complexity originally, but they picked it up very quickly. And one guy who commented it was too tricky for him actually came back and then said that everything clicked and then actually bought a copy of the game there and then. It was, yeah.
Well, it's one of those games where I think practice makes perfect. You're never going to be perfect at the immediacy of how you play it. So, no, it's actually a good game and a... No, it's a easy learning curve, I think, personally. What can we actually play Aura of Worlds on at the moment?
So currently it's for PC. We've soft released on itch.io like a few hours before PAX, so we were up to 4 a.m. just getting our website to work, otherwise another keys would work. That would be a bit awkward. But anyone who buys the game on itch.io now also gets the copy on Steam when we release on March, April. They also get all updates from now to the end of time, which we have notify you in-game every 3 to 5 weeks.
Okay. And lastly, if people want to get a bit more information on Aura of Worlds and Cognitive Forge, where would they go to find that information?
Well, we're on Facebook, Twitter. Okay, there's too many links for me to list out directly,
okay.
So just Google Aura of Worlds. It's the first result that's going to come up.
And that's where they'll find everything they need to know. That's great. Well, thank you very much, Anthony.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast to hear all our past episodes. Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, and we'll catch you at the next checkpoint.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.